There's no place to escape to.
This is the last
podcast on the left.
That's when the cannibalism started.
Yes, I don't know if it's because of all the Thelema we've been reading, but I had a dream last night that me and Carolina were in a thruple with like a young James Caan.
I mean, that fit really does fit.
What a lucky young James Caan.
But that's the thing. Was lucky for James Caan because I was the one that felt put out. You know how it happens? You know, I felt a little put out of the whole thing.
Okay, wait, James. I'm just going to go eat my chicken vindaloo alone.
But is this because he wouldn't let you fuck him?
No. They just seem to be having a better time without me.
Yeah, why'd you dream that you were with another dude? I mean, which is fine. But it's
not his fault. He doesn't know.
It's his dream.
I don't choose what I dream about.
Huh.
And
it's Thelema. And in Thelema, there's a lot of those MMF situations happening. A lot
there
of spit roasting.
Is.
A lot of spit roasting.
It is very difficult to be a magician because one of the singular most difficult things I think truly is to be able to sit in a fairly stuffy room surrounded by a group of people in robes and remain hard, because that is one of the trials of one of the steps of the OTO is literally you must enter into the circle rude published. That is what they called it. And then you have to maintain it, which is very difficult for me because, again, I love to perform, but not when it's intimate.
Tough day to be a janitor. Welcome to Last Podcast on the Left, everyone. I am Ben, hanging out with Marcus, the newly horned up Marcus, by the way, looking at James Caan's young tushy, and Henry Zabrowski.
So you were watching them have sex with each other?
Not at all. I don't know. I said nothing in my statement to imply that.
Yet you said there was a thruple.
A thruple? Yeah, a thruple, not necessarily a threesome. A thruple is different from a threesome.
So you were doing the boring part? You were doing everybody sitting around figuring out what we're going to watch on Netflix and a trifecta together?
That's hard. The thruple. Oh. I'm talking about a thruple. That's why I said thruple, not threesome. No, it was a thruple. Yeah. And then at the end of it, like an old like girlfriend from high school, like this really Christian girl, she got a hold of me. He's like, hey, I hear you having some troubles. You want to get together? I'm like, I don't want that either.
You know what I find interesting? You know, in our dreams, everybody you see is you.
Indeed, that's the case. And of course, a thruple, that's what I call my air, land, and sea, my fish filet chicken breast sandwich, and good old beef. Okay.
Technically, that's already called a McGangbang. That's already been done.
The McGangbang.
Yes.
Fantastic. All right, everyone, we're on to Jack Parsons, part two.
So when we last left Jack Parsons, the year was 1939, and he'd just been introduced to the Los Angeles occult scene in the form of the Agape Lodge of the OTO, founded by Aleister Crowley. At the same time, he was also making seismic breakthroughs in the scientific world through his work in rocketry.
And can they be uncoupled? I submit that they cannot.
Okay.
But by 1939, the term rocket was seen as a purely science fiction term. Put another way, it would be like if we developed faster than light technology, but called it warp drive instead of the more scientific way of saying it, FTL.
But that's what I fucking hate. Just call it warp drive.
Yeah, just call it warp drive.
I think that's a problem, though. And then Trump did it with Space Force. And then you're like, oh, it's fun that it's Space Force, but they don't do anything. They just got a new flag.
And it's stupid.
Right. Yeah.
Well, they are blowing stuff up.
Yeah. So to shed the science fiction connotations, the Jack Parsons crew at Caltech, the so-called Suicide Squad, they decided to change the name of their technology.
Magic.
Instead of calling them rockets, Parsons and the rest would from then on refer to this new technology as...
metal hot dogs.
Perfect.
Jet technology.
Jet
technology. Okay.
And then
jets.
They all got together and they faced off against those Puerto Ricans.
Fantastic. That's the Jets and the Sharks, my friend. That is now I forgot what it is.
West Side Story. However, this technology was not shooting towards the stars just yet in 1939. World War II had already begun, and conflict, in one way or another, was obviously on the horizon for the United States. So, the Suicide Squad was given funding from the government to develop jet-assisted takeoff for their fighter and cargo planes. This technology was known as JADO.
Cool. Oh.
And the Suicide Squad became America's first government-sanctioned rocket research group. I'm going to be using the term JADO a lot. over the course of the series.
So just get used to it.
JADO. And what does it stand for again?
Jet-assisted takeoff. That's why I'm reiterating.
JADO.
Thank you.
J-A-T-O.
It's the evil cousin of Kato. He was in...
He did too much meth to fall asleep.
He was outside of the pool house.
Oh, okay.
So after almost blowing themselves up on the Caltech campus with a twin set of explosions when an oxygen line caught fire and ignited a tank of ethylene, the Suicide Squad asked the government for a budget of $100,000.
Hey.
That's nothing.
They got 10.
Oh, good.
But we're still overjoyed that someone was finally taking them seriously. And they'd honestly sort of highballed it a little bit. You ask for a lot, you get a little.
I've seen Shark Tank.
It's important to do.
In fact, Parsons and his crew believe that they had been immediately welcomed into the higher ranks of scientific society because just after they'd received funding, they were invited to a formal dinner at Caltech. They're in the big leagues.
We're going to war. We're getting chicken.
This is really exciting. Good broccoli, too.
However, Frank Molina, one of their crew, discovered that the Suicide Squad had actually been invited to the fancy dinner due to a clerical error, but Frank didn't have the heart to tell the rest of the crew that they'd only been invited by accident.
Who cares? If you're invited by accident, you're still invited. I think that's how we've gotten invited to Heidi Klum's Halloween party. I'm not going to tell her that we're invited, because as soon as they find out, then you're off the list.
A W is a W in all areas of life. Never question. Just show up.
Show up. You were invited.
So after months of testing different powder formulas in huts made of corrugated iron in the Arroyo Seco, where the temperatures regularly hit 100 degrees, Parsons made a breakthrough that got the crew closer to JADO, jet-assisted takeoff.
So that's what it stands for. It's for JADO.
So the government doubled his group's funding in 1940.
Yeah, man.
But just as Parsons was breaking new ground in the field of rocketry, he was also immersing himself in the works of Aleister Crowley.
Mr. Crowley!
And he was well on his way to discovering knowledge that he believed would allow him to change the fabric of reality.
Because not only was it Conk's own Pax that was a book that inspired him, which was, we talked a little bit last week, which is what Aleister Crowley views as one of the fundamental books that one must read in order to even become a Minerval inside of the OTO. In order to even become, yeah, that's what the initiates are called.
A Minerval?
Right? A Minerval!
Oh my.
But he was also obsessed with a book called Darker Than You Think, which was by Jack Williamson, and it's about what? Anybody that can turn into an animal. It's a secret society that has fostered doubt in werewolves, right? So that they could go back and hide, right? Once, because they staged the witch hunts of the 1800s, right? To say, look, we got all the witches and all the werewolves. We got them all. They did it.
They were LARPing.
Yes. But they were werewolves.
Oh.
And then they went into hiding so they could go and plan their next move so they can come back and take over the world. But he got really into this concept of shape-shifting, right? There was like something about this. And the fact that the lead woman in the book was a big-bosomed, flaming red-haired, green-eyed woman that would become, as we see,
woman.
Yes, his obsessions as things went on. But this is, now we're seeing him in what I call his like neophyte phase, where he is starting to understand the processes of magical thinking and ritual, and he is getting obsessed with it because at the same time, not only is it like personally fulfilling, it's inspiring, but it's getting him out of the world of all these stuffy scientists and getting him into the world of all this hot ass bush.
All right. So now you feel better getting that off your chest.
That's one thing.
All right. Fantastic. A Merval sounds like an otter that doesn't like to swim.
He's been saving that.
he's a typical Merval.
Minerval.
Minerval. He's a typical Minerval.
Now, concerning Aleister Crowley, perhaps the most important concept in his belief system, the lema, is that of will, which, again, is not necessarily how we think of will. It's not the will to succeed or the will to survive. Rather, will, in Thelemic terms, is more destiny combined with purpose.
And again, this is more of your interpretation. Will, as you'll discover, the more and more you read it, the more and more you understand that it is a constant shifting deciphering of will and what that means on any different level. Like it both means it is both a practical level, like just straight up, it is my will to be the hottest Scottish Polish NBA player that they've ever seen, right?
Well, that's not possible.
Exactly. But that's just one of my wills, right? Then you find out what
lines
up.
Shouldn't
it
be within the realm of possibility?
That's the idea, is that your true will may be, also maybe. Because think about it. Was it really in the realm of possibility for any one of us to be professionals in the entertainment industry? I don't fucking know. Not necessarily. We were born way outside of it. None of us had institutional connections. What do we see? Mostly people who make it in entertainment are people that are born in money and in magic.
Yeah, but but it would be like if we didn't have any mouths or eyes or ears or feet or hands.
But you got to be super talented then.
Yeah.
You have to be the torso man.
I had like two fortune tellers tell me when I was a kid that I was going to do well in entertainment.
Well, that's because they were just trying to molest you. That's different. But again, it's more about like these concepts are like moving and shifting. So it really depends on what aligns with you. And with Jack Parsons, as soon as he discovered this, because we talked about last episode, he was such a headstrong motherfucker that he was like, ah, yes, I know my will.
Mm-hmm. I mean, my interpretation still holds, I think. Destinies change. Purposes change.
Yeah.
And in Thalamic thought, every person has a true will or purpose that should be pursued to the exclusion of all else. And of course, that can change. Purposes change, goals change. Yes. And Crowley theorized that much of the world's problems came from people not following their true will. And perhaps from, you know, Henry's interpretation, that it might be not recognizing when your will has changed, holding on to something far longer than you should.
Exactly. Or it's like a dude named Minerval who was born with his foot backwards, but also became an NFL kicker.
But again, learn how to use it. Understood. I need to do football backwards.
So he kicks it backwards, which is like a horse.
That's something else. That's something different. Jado. That's his Jado.
Jado it is. All right. I'm getting it now.
Now, I think the concept of true will, I think it holds true for some people and it isn't true at all for others. Although I'll admit that the older I get, even since we did our Aleister Crowley series, I mean, the more the concept of true will really does make a lot of sense to me.
Because it's on you to mine yourself, the raw material of your spirit, to find what the will is. And that's the thing. On you to do it.
I'm going to go make some raw material right now.
You see, again, the man is of chicken wing, right? Ben Kissel's will is mostly centered around chicken wing issues and chicken wing politics, right? And chicken, like what's in that world. And in that, Kissel's expressing his Bud Light will.
Right. That is true. As a matter of fact, on Sunday, I did get a little bit too drunk and I was like, chicken wings? Why do they call them chicken wings when they're actually chicken feet?
And then
it's just completely, utterly incorrect.
And then I followed myself. I was like, no, there's no way they have to be the wing. But I was like convinced for like 30 seconds there were feet.
No,
man. Isn't that weird?
You can buy chicken feet. Have you never been to a grocery store?
No, I know.
I'm so confused.
I fought all over myself
with this.
I was like, why would they call chicken wings wings when they're feet? And I was like, no, that's wrong.
It's in the name of the food.
I know. I was questioning everything.
It was like last night when I texted Henry at like 1 a.m. to feeling like an idiot because I finally figured out that the reason why the Scottish water creature, the kelpie, the seahorse, the kelpie is called a kelpie because of kelp.
Because fucking
underwater.
Seaweed.
Oh, intriguing indeed.
Yeah, and Henry texted back, we are dumb as shit.
Yeah, man, because kelpie's also the name of an unhelpful Starbucks barista.
But that's the
modern interpretation.
I love kelpie.
Well, Jack Parsons, he was getting into Crowley's teachings so deeply that he began to consider thelema itself as his true will. Rocketry was not his true will. Thelema was his true will, the true student. As such, Jack and Helen were initiated into the Agape Lodge of the OTO on February 15th, 1941, with Jack taking this as his motto. Henry, please.
The establishment of thelema through the rituals of love.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, I mean, he's basically stating his intention to fuck his way through a lot of magic.
You know, there are just, as I was going through this process again, right, because we've been, when we did the Aleister Crowley series, I also went insane, and now I'm back in it. I sent Marcus some really funky-ass thelema jazz.
I'm waiting until next, because next week is when we're truly going to get into the magic stuff. I'm waiting for then, so I don't mix the science and the jazz too much.
I wish I could play some for you now.
Can we
want
play
you
it
to
next
feel...
episode, please?
Yeah, but no, because it just
next episode
just,
we'll get into the jazz.
It's just humping music, right? It's humping music. Yeah. And you know what it is, man? Is that we're caught up on our fucking bullshit. Right?
I agree.
Because we talk about, yeah, it's him mad about, like, you know, he can't do, like, he's fucking his way through magic, but he just understood, what if fucking became my life?
Nothing wrong with
and
that.
And not and only is fucking the center of my life, but then I can figure out the sort of, like, personal power attached to it. Fuck rockets. I've been blowing shit up since I'm 9. I've been doing this a long yeah. time. And now I'm like, wait a second. Now I can fuck and wear a wizard cap and do the whole fucking, the all of the pageantry. Like the idea of doing those rituals and walking into a room, you're blindfolded and a man with a rope's pulling you in there. And then there's like a nude woman there and she's got to suck you not till you come. Because you got to save it.
Oh,
this
edgy.
Incredible.
Edgy indeed. And Fuck Rockets, a fantastic new dildo product.
Yeah.
It's a great one by Linda Lovelace.
She's yeah. been dead for years.
No, she's not. No, wasn't Linda she the one that had the clitoris in her throat?
That's deep throat, yes.
That was Linda Lovelace.
He
though.
Refuses to learn. He refuses to engage with the material.
I think that was Linda Lovelace.
She's dead. She's been dead since 2002. She's yeah. been she has been yeah. dead.
Okay.
Yeah, I think you're thinking of
That is Debbie Does Dallas. He is correct, but Debbie Does Dallas comes from like 1972.
Yeah, but that yeah. was Linda Lovelace.
Yes.
Yeah, what a story. What a story there.
Anyway, I think that, yeah, it's all this talking about fucking his way through magic. It's not bad. It's not, I'm not poo-pooing it at all. It is a good excuse to live a lifestyle that's stinky and sweaty in all the best ways.
Mm.
But Jack Parsons was a true believer in thalamic principles. He's not just doing a... Yes, it's fun. That's great. That's a great side... That is definitely sure. a great side effect.
He understood.
But he's doing it because he believes in it.
He understood it's one package. Mm-hmm. And that it's all one package. Like, all of it. Like, and who he was is that he was just an egg. Mm-hmm. And now he need to crack the egg and become a chicken.
Oh, mm-hmm. exciting.
Well, once Jack Parsons was a part of the Lodge, he increased the membership, started giving talks about the OTO in his own home, and began to think of the OTO as his family, which would prove to be a grave mistake later on.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so Parsons split his time between JADO tests and the OTO, and he would spend his off time in the desert unwinding the way a guy who splits his time between highly dangerous experimental rocketry and sex magic might do.
Cool.
Scrabble.
No, I don't know. I don't know the name of the game that him and Ed Foreman used to play. I mean, maybe it's called like Shoot Gun or yeah. Almost Die.
Yeah, they would what is this?
I could just see him being a board game guy.
They'd stand 50 yards apart from each other,
uh-huh.
take handguns, and then just fire them at each other to see who could get the closest to the other guy without hitting him with a bullet.
Yeah, dude.
Well, what if they hit him?
He'd get shot. But yeah, man, this is the thing. He's not a board game guy. This is like, this is the freakiest, wildest motherfucker you would ever meet. You would want him nowhere near your girlfriend.
Oh,
like he
wow.
is a, at this point, this time, because everything's taken off and he's getting super slippery with it and all the yeah. magic and shit. Man, I love this motherfucker.
He can have sex with my girlfriend. Her name is Minervla. And she's fantastic.
She needs to do the reading.
Yeah, absolutely. She has ears where her eyes are supposed to be, and you should see where her eyes are.
But the thing about the OTO is that it did interfere with Jack's day job. One time, he stayed up far too late partying, reading poetry, playing records with all his magical buddies.
Oh, that's nice.
It's a nice night, but he was super hungover because he yeah. really liked absinthe.
Oh,
and
yeah.
he made his own absinthe.
Hey, man. Fucking keeps you wiggly, man.
It's a strong one.
So the next morning, because he was so hungover, he rushed through a countdown and it caused a huge explosion.
That's
Wait a second. How do you... Okay. You count down. How did he mm-hmm. rush through it?
You just like, all right, let's go. 5.3 to 1. All right, it's got it. He's like, got it. Put it up there.
Like Tommy was so directing the room, but he knew he had to, he could only, the rental was only good for 15 more minutes.
Well, I think with a countdown, I might be talking completely out of my ass here, but I'm extrapolating from knowledge that I've learned about rockets over the last couple of weeks.
Cool.
I think part of the point of a countdown is not just to like, let everyone know that the rocket's about to go off so they can look. I think there's a lot of preparations that you're doing during the countdown.
Yeah, right. Put pressure in the oscillator. And,
yeah.
And then, yeah, fire up the gribble gobble and then get Ted off his sandwich.
Absolutely.
Hey, Ted, you're sitting on a sandwich. And he's like, oh, my lunch.
Get off of the sandwich.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But if you could just go like 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, fucking do it.
Fucking
then.
Go get it done.
Right. It's not about the numbers so much as the actions.
It's not so much like when we show up hungover, we just ruin a week of content.
Yeah.
Well, technically, and some of our best episodes have been hungover.
Some, but it's, again, freedom is a two-edged sword.
Yes.
Because sometimes it's
some
the
of our
other
best,
side.
Many of our worst.
But it's that, you know, the thing is when he shows up hungover, he blows shit up.
Right. Yeah.
However, Parsons' involvement in the OTO was a double-edged sword.
Is a candle good or evil?
Neutral. Ooh, sandalwood.
Because while it did sometimes cause him to make mistakes, the intellectual exercise of studying Thelema seemed to unlock some previously inaccessible part of his intellect, or so the legend goes.
It is inspiring.
It is.
Now, by the time Pearl Harbor was bombed in December of 1941, the JADO systems developed by the Suicide Squad were still showing positive returns, so the research took on a new urgency. Now, even though Parsons had proved that jet-assisted takeoff, JADO, could work, he hadn't yet found a fuel formula that didn't fail 30% of the time. And you can't send that shit out into the battlefield.
Not yet.
Well, it depends how much you care about your soldiers.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's Vietnam, then yeah, fuck it.
Yeah, let's see how it works in the jungle.
Yeah. So Pearl Harbor, everyone knows, it was a psyop.
We let it happen. We let it happen, bro. We got to do that episode.
It's a lot more complicated than that. It's so much more complicated.
FDR could jump. But he couldn't walk. That's what's weird. He could jump.
Really? Wow.
But then, after working with this formula that, you know, didn't work 30% of the time, an idea sprung from his unconsciousness that changed the course of humanity.
I'm gonna go!
Uh-oh, he's gonna go.
See, Parsons had been working with black powder for the JADO test to no avail, and liquid fuel was still too volatile for what the military wanted. But according to the legend, Parsons finally made the breakthrough to replace black powder with something else after seeing workmen spread hot asphalt on a roof.
And this is where weed helps science. I mean this. It's that there's sometimes you're just spacing out. We were just joking about this before the show about how, like, yes, sometimes it looks like we're not working because what we're doing is called executive time.
Yeah.
Where you're sitting and you're just thinking. You're just thinking about what could you do, right? And you wonder,
working.
Hey, I want to move forward. What should I do? I need to put this down on my calendar, executive time. This was his executive time, watching a bunch of guys slave on a roof as he's just smoking doobies. And he's just like, holy fucking shit.
I can't, what a horrible job that is. They were putting asphalt on a roof?
Yeah, they're doing their tar on the roof.
So it's hot as
they're
all shit.
Tar on roofs,
God.
It's a rough job, man.
That's
a
what we should be talking about is those roofers.
Oh, yeah, finally.
Thank you for all the roofers out there because we have a roof over our head because of them.
That's right.
Chicken wings.
It's the cardigans.
Now, Ben, do you think in the future you'll write a book of chicken wings or a book about chicken wings?
Because is there a difference? Chicken wings is a two-boned food.
It is a double-edged sword in many, many ways. No, actually, sometimes I feel guilty eating chicken wings for some. Sometimes I can't eat meat on the bone. It makes me feel guilty. I also could. I was about
hypocrite.
To eat some ham
That's
yesterday,
a hypocrite.
And I put it in my mouth and I took it out.
What?
No, I mean, I like pigs. I'm not eating ham because I feel like it tastes like human flesh.
Huh.
Hey, you know.
It's a psychological thing.
I've been
talking about my love for pigs for like 3 years. I finally can't really eat.
Yeah. I am incorrect in saying Ben Kessel lives an unexamined life.
It's examined.
No, this is true.
It's highly examined.
It shows there's something in there.
Yeah. I don't know what's being examined.
I don't know.
But it's examined.
Well, the smell inside of the asphalt reminded Jack Parsons of a flaming liquid weapon used by the Byzantine Empire that was called Greek fire.
Greek fire. Nothing but hot Greek fire.
Sweet.
Greek fire was a naval weapon that set enemy ships on fire by emitting jets of liquid fire from bronze tubes.
Tubes.
Awesome.
Reputedly, one could not extinguish Greek fire once it spread across your ship, except by using sand, strong vinegar, or, in one telling, old urine, which I guess points towards ammonia.
Old urine is also the story of a dog that was shot as a puppy.
Yeah.
Because of its terrible name.
Yeah, it was too bad. He kept on throwing all the kids in the well. And it's like you're supposed to rescue them out of it.
But what made Greek fire truly fearsome and effective was the fact that it burned on water, which made escape from an already burning ship impossible.
Oh, man, smoking water.
Yeah, legitimately.
On the water.
Wow.
It also meant that Greek fire could reliably burn for long periods of time, reliably and steadily, consistently. Now, no one knows exactly what Greek fire was made of because its recipe was a secret passed down through emperors. But it's theorized that it was either petroleum, saltpeter, sulfur, or naturally occurring asphalt.
Ooh. Asphalt's naturally occurring?
I suppose so.
I don't know. May I ask then, why are we putting this on roofs? It seems highly flammable.
No, it's No. It's like how it's... I think that we're all incorrect. I think all three of us might be incorrect in a way, but only about the asphalt.
Are they putting a basketball court up there?
Asphalt in and of itself is not combustible. But if you mix asphalt with other things,
it was just the smell. It was the smell that made him think about it.
Yes.
Yeah. It's like bleach is fine and ammonia is fine, but if you mix bleach and ammonia together, you get mustard gas.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Absolutely.
It's chemistry. I'm talking about how chemistry works.
Wow.
I'm fucking explaining chemistry right now.
You have become a high school teacher to me and Kissel.
Yeah.
And both of us are just
middle school teacher.
Oh, yeah.
Ass. Also, he's a horrible teacher. He's teaching kids how to make mustard gas.
Don't go in the bathroom. Sorry, it's my ass's fault.
See, you know how to get, you know how to reach these kids. You know how to do it.
That's kid, though. Ass's fault.
So, when Parsons saw those workmen spreading black asphalt on a Caltech roof, he grabbed a bucket of common roofing tar and added an oxidizer that allowed the tar to breathe and flame. There's about 40 or 50 more highly complicated scientific steps between that point and the end point. But before Parsons knew it, he had created a fuel called Galsit 53, which opened up a whole new category of rocket fuel, making solid propellants safer and more practical than the liquid propellants that tended to explode fairly easily and still tend to explode fairly easily. That fucking rocket that we launched off this morning almost exploded on the fucking on the platform until the Red Squad went out and fixed the fuel leak.
But that is the excitement of science, is that you never know when your hero or your confetti, you never know.
And while this new category of rocket fuel would be used to fire ballistic missiles like Polaris, Poseidon, and the Minutemen series, the descendants of Galsit 53 would also propel space shuttles out of Earth's orbit decades later.
I do find it magically interesting that one of the ways they figured out how to oxidize it was that when they put it in a tube, they have there's a space in the center of it that allows it to burn longer, and that space is a five-pointed star.
Oh, interesting.
Very interesting indeed, sir.
You got it. You really brought a lot of science to it.
I will bring this whole thing to a grinning halt.
Indeed, it has halted.
Now, Jack Parsons was only 27 years old when he made this discovery. But being 27, he was also making some extremely questionable decisions in his personal life, especially after he was fully under the freewheeling influence of the OTO.
Well, I will say this, though. He's 27 in 1939 era, which, like inflation, it also affects age. So he's 43.
Yes, and he'd only have 10 more years of his life. I think that that's also very interesting because we talk about the three ages of man and magic. And what we have seen up until this point, the first episode was his boy phase, right? Him as his child, right? But now we're seeing him as the man phase. Man phase as he grows to fruition and his power.
Okay, great.
And when his wife Helen went on vacation in June of 1941 with her mother, Parsons began an affair with Helen's half-sister, Sarah Northrup, who was just a hair under 18 years old.
Something about hitting hair on that really is difficult.
All right.
A smidge? Just a smidge under 18 years old? Is that better?
Smidge sounds like what you call. You're being like, yeah, this is my smidge. Right here. Yeah, I don't know how old she is. Don't ask her.
Mm-hmm. Well, feisty, untamed, and somewhat cold, Sarah greeted her sister Helen upon her return from vacation, wearing Helen's clothes and saying, I'm Jack's wife now.
Yeah. Oh, she's Jack's wife now.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. In a cruelly candid letter, Jack told his wife that he began the affair with her half-sister deliberately and would do it again because he preferred Sarah sexually and he was better suited to her temperamentally.
You say cruelly candid. He did it in his version of, this is the thruple that you dreamed about, right? Yeah. Where it's like, it's James cutting to Con. The quick. It's cutting to the quick. And I had an actor once tell me, and it's true, if you want to really do well in this business, you gotta be fucking. Right? Yeah. You got to be fucking all the time. And magically...
I know which actor told you that.
You know yes. exactly
and,
what...
You didn't tell me, but I know which actors you know, and I know which actor told you that.
Yes, yes. But he's basically this idea, and it's true, is that as a magician, you're way more powerful if you be fucking, right? Mm-hmm. And so with Helen, yeah, Helen's great and all, but Helen's Helen. Yeah, and I've been telling you already.
Yeah, he had admitted that Helen's character was superior, and he admitted that Sarah would not have faced the hardships that Helen faced with Jack. And he admitted
definitely
that,
not.
My God,
definitely
she's not even anywhere near right. on the same level of woman as you are. But,
love you, Helen. I love you, Helen. But the thing is, a man, a poet, should be alive, be drunken in love, betrayed, hurt. Lifted from pinnacle to pinnacle. Mm-hmm. She licks my asshole.
Yeah, that's basically all that means.
Well, she's sexy and new. And then again, he's fucking somebody new, and then it gives you that, it gives you a little pep in your step.
I don't know why he kept it in the family like
she
that.
She was right there.
Yeah, but...
It was just Midge.
He works at a goddamn college.
Yeah, well... He doesn't work. Well, yeah, technically. By this point, he's starting to move out of the college and into the private sector.
Yes.
Literally.
He's trying to create... his lodge.
Yeah. And actually, as we'll get to in here in just a second, the half-sister was sort of the point. Now, this is a pretty clear-cut dick move, but Jack Parsons was doing all of this with the encouragement and the sanction of the OTO, who looked at marriage as a, quote, detestable institution.
Well, that's technically Aleister Crowley's direct opinion of marriage, but he was also married twice. And so he
well,
did
feel it.
Well,
that's why he thinks that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But then the OTO then has rebranded since saying, if it is your will, then get married.
Sure.
But thank again... you. Magicians be fucking.
What if I just beat you up, OTO? What
it's
if I just don't give a shit what you're
organization.
Tell me?
Yeah, I mean, that's the idea. They'd be like, good, congrats. You're thank following
you.
Your will.
Thank you.
Well, as for Aleister Crowley, he said people should marry for convenience and agree to go their separate ways without jealousy once it was over.
Why must there be divorce? You know, which just sounds like a very divorced man's opinion.
Sounds like someone who's listening to a heroin needle.
Yes.
And indeed, Parsons saw his affair with Sarah as a crucial step in his magical tutelage. He wrote that his passion for Sarah gave him the magical force he needed at the time.
I need my magical force!
Okay. The juice, because the act of adultery, tinged with incest, served as a magical confirmation in the law of Thelema somehow. Can you explain that to me, Henry?
Well, you know, it depends.
Yeah, explain why incest is good really quick. Just
a tinge of incest.
45 seconds on why a smidge of incest is okay.
It is not. Well, there is a little bit of the concept of transgressions, right? Yes. The idea that a transgressive act can fuck with the magic juju and give it to you strong. But technically, the OTO and Aleister Crowley and Thelema specifically comes out against incest. Technically, yeah.
but it's his wife's sister. That's why it's tinged with incest. It's got a smidge of incest. It's a bit of a hair of incest.
He just knows that
it's
he'll
a hair
let...
of incest caught between your teeth.
Yeah, hours long, Grandma. But truly, it's more about the fact that Sarah will be down with the activities of the OTO and understand. Hey, like because I think Helen was like. Well, no matter what, I'm your number one, right? I'm your number one. And he's like, yeah, baby. But then Jack Parsons at some point was like, what if I had like five number ones? Right? Oh. But then you're all equal. You're like a team of rivals.
Well, there's that Helen, like she was not some wilting flower. She didn't run away screaming. She was a full-fledged member of the OTO. She would be a true believer until the day she died. Helen Parsons is extremely important to this organization.
Very much so.
So she stayed. And perhaps because Parsons was able to pull off such an impressive sister switcheroo, he began to gain a reputation in the organization. Specifically, Crowley's second-in-command in the OTO, a German immigrant living in New York named Carl Germer, he was hearing good things about this young rocket scientist out in California who had the tiniest bit of celebrity and just the tiniest bit more money.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that seems to matter the most.
Well, very much so. A lot of organizations, team, they really would like, you know, they want their Tom Cruise. Mm. What, again, what L. Ron Hubbard, the difference between the genius and the artist, which is what we're talking about next week, is he understood you got to fucking, we do need funding.
You do need funding.
And we do need some name recognition.
Sure.
And Jack Parsons was just in the newspaper as the brand new Frankenstein's monster looking guy that is ready for the fucking primetime, baby.
Indeed. Well, sounds like he's more of the doctor.
Live from your grave.
Hi, I'm Jackie Zabrowski.
And I'm MJ.
And I'm Holden from the Page 7 podcast, and we're going on tour!
That's right, we're touring all up in this mother-freaking country.
I'm fake cursing, so whatever, Jackie. Just say the filthy F-word already.
And we will say the filthy F-word when we come to your town.
That's right, we're coming to Texas, the Midwest, the Northeast, and then right back here in Cali, baby.
For ticket links and more details, visit lastpodcastnetwork.com.
That's right, lastpodcastnetwork.com.
Page 7 and Wizard and the Bruiser present
Release the Butthole Cut!
Wait, that's really what we're calling the tour?
Absolutely! Release the Butthole Cut! For more information, go to lastpodcastnetwork.com.
Now, Crowley's second in command, Carl Germer, he had an interesting story all of his own, and he'd very much suffered for magic and had come out the other end still a believer. In 1937, just 3 years before Germer contacted Parsons, he'd been in Germany when Hitler banned all occult groups, including the OTO.
The only room for one!
Yeah. As a result, Germer had found himself in a concentration camp.
Oh, my
God.
But
he was eventually released, and he immigrated to America.
God, it's got to be terrible to have ADHD in there.
Henry, you are off the show. He's off the show,
yeah,
Marcus.
Yeah, you're done. You're
He's
done.
He's off the show.
That's
that
it.
Was
That's
so
it.
Hacky. That was so hacky. I'm upset.
It is
I,
my
just said,
will.
I just said
I'm
holding on chicken
upset.
Wings.
Yeah, I know.
I'm
it is
upset.
A will. That's why he's
oh,
got no.
God.
You can't.
We've been doing this for 12
him.
Fucking years, buddy. We are professional entertainers.
You've been doing comedy for like 20 years.
Oh, but comedy,
long before
even,
we came along.
Even 30 years.
That's the best part. Is that because I have this experience, everything I say is canon.
No,
and
it's
everything
not canon.
I say, it's
it
like
needs to be shot out of a cannon and into space and never heard from again.
Whoa.
Well, once Carl Germer arrived in America from the concentration camp, he was then harassed by the FBI for being a close associate of Aleister Crowley. Because if you'll remember, Crowley had spent all of World War I in America writing pro-German propaganda for fun and profit.
But he was like a double, you know, he's a double-double agent.
Yeah.
He was covered in animals.
Whatever.
Yeah, it was what he was saying that he was writing things that were so ridiculous that it was actually making the Germans look bad.
Oh, yeah, that's how that works. I forgot.
Yes.
Yeah. Eventually, though, Germer settled into life in New York and was acting as Crowley's representative in America. He decided to act as a personal guru to Jack Parsons and implied that if Parsons accepted his tutelage, he would soon be introduced to Aleister Crowley himself.
Which would actually fit in because it's interesting during this time period, Jack Parsons was actually, he was trying to become a more quote unquote serious student. Mm. And there is a lot in the AA, not the OTO. So AA was Aleister Crowley's, his own specific brand of the OTO. And it was just for him. But he viewed that as like Sea Org. Of the OTO, to put it in that level, right? Where we're like, the AA is what I have personal control over, and you're supposed to meet a dude, right? You're supposed to have a guy that's supposed to be a handler that brings a neophyte into the AA. So at some point, that's where Aleister Crowley, he says in a letter, I wish to God I had Jack for 6 months, even three. With a hustle to train in will, in discipline, he must understand that fine and fiery flashes of spirit come from the organization of matter, from the drilling of every function of every bodily organ until it has become so regular as to be automatic and carried on by itself deep down in the unconscious.
Honestly, he wants to butt fuck.
Well, yeah.
And he just wants as Jack, will. But he just wants Jack Parsons to just like be able to just like take it whenever.
Well, Aleister Crowley wants, it's the opposite. He wants to be able, for Jack Parsons, persons to give it whenever.
Oh.
You want to be able to look, as Aleister Crowley did believe, that his submission to another was the most powerful way for... He got control by giving control.
Okay.
Power bottoms.
All right. Of course.
Well, once a Crowley introduction was dangled, Parsons increased his involvement in the OTO. He suggested that the OTO should move their headquarters from Los Angeles to Pasadena, which would allow Jack to spend more time at the lodge. But perhaps more importantly, it would give the lodge more space to spread out, especially after Jack Parsons rented a mansion at 1003 Orange Grove Avenue for $100 a month.
This place was fucking huge.
$100 a month. I'm going to jump off a fucking bridge. That's incredible.
It was a different time.
It was a different time. So basically just taxes and rent. That's why they wanted to go to Pasadena. More space.
More space. Yeah.
More bang for your buck. How many times did they say more bang for your buck?
I think there was a lot of that in the OTO.
Yeah.
But Jack Parsons lived in Pasadena, and it was an attempt. They viewed him as the one. That was like one thing that started coming up. It was like, as people were meeting him at the Agape Lounge, and they were like, this
Agape Lodge. The Agape Lounge, I think.
That's the outside.
Ooh, that's a hookah lounge.
But when they started meeting him, they were like, oh, he might have the X factor.
Okay.
But Aleister Crowley, again, he was a very hard teacher. And his whole thing was that, literally. And you had to kiss the ring.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
But Parsons filled that mansion with OTO members, and they were all supposed to live there communally. It was sort of a second draft of Crowley's failed Abbey of Thelema, where people lost their minds and or their lives in the countryside of Sicily.
Well, that's where he ate shit.
Yes, and then watched others eat poop.
Yeah, I remember that.
I remember that. Yeah, he ate shit and then spent 2 days going like, that was a bad idea.
Oh,
that was,
didn't like it.
I should have this astral stomach ache. It's supposed to be something I ate.
Yeah, what have you been eating? Pancakes?
Piles
or
of shit.
Piles of shit.
You know me.
I maybe circle that in the calendar and notice when the stomach ache started right after you ate that pile of human shit.
It was a full log. That's what he said, that he was
a
full log.
I remember the story. That one sticks out. I remember only the things that I don't like the most. That was that one.
He was an experimenter.
I think he cut it with a fork and knife.
I saw the movie Sallow.
God.
Well, when I say communal, this is communal living here in this mansion with all these OTO members. I don't mean that everyone was on equal footing. Rooms were assigned according to OTO hierarchy, with Jack Parsons and Sarah Northrup sharing a nice two-room suite so they could have separate affairs, as per the OTO's teachings.
They were working.
Okay.
Yeah, it sounded like they were fucking, but they were working.
All right.
Ever the nerd, though, Jack Parsons covered the walls of his room with all the knives and swords he'd collected throughout the years.
That's my boy.
Proving that you can still be a sci-fi fan who openly collects bladed weapons and still gets laid if you frame it the right way.
That's I'm all tell it you is, this, man.
No one is framing it the right way.
It's packaging,
so
man.
Don't do it. I had a friend in college. He had knives above his bed. He just liked knives. But then you take a girl home and then it's just scary.
It's college. So, again, it's different.
But he's framing a rocket it the right way. You can't do it. You can't say it's just because it. You can't say like, I just like knives. Like, you got to say like, ah, yes, this blade. I procured this blade when I was taking a travel to Kathmandu and discovered.
Super wet.
Yeah, but it's just scary because now you're holding a blade that can kill somebody and they're in bed.
Ceremonial
and
sword. And they go, that's how you frame it. And then again,
this is my favorite chainsaw.
But do you have a job? Are you available? Sometimes it really helps.
Less weapons in plain sight, I feel, also helps someone calm down.
Well, sensibly, the mansion at Orange Grove was supposed to be a utopian community made up of true Thelemites who shared all the responsibilities.
But this is the problem. It's kind of like in Satanism, right? Where if you, it's all of these guys, right? Each one's each man and woman is a star, right? Mm-hmm. And it's all like love and her will. And it's about expressing your true will. And it's just the thing about Thelemites is that it's really difficult to get them to work as a group.
Yeah.
Because each one is so important to themselves. It's kind of hard to be like, Frater of Babylon. You're on trash duty. And he's just like, I want to come. And you're like, well, why don't you come while you're doing the recycling?
Work it into it.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Get aroused by recycling.
Didn't work out at all.
Mm-mm.
And most of them fell into traditional gender roles if they fell into any role at all.
Because this is before they started really taking it seriously.
Okay. Yeah.
Jane Wolfe, one of the first members of the Agape Lodge, had to do all the shopping for the whole house, and another woman named Phyllis Seckler was supposed to do all the cooking. Neither one really did much of either.
See, at least they were bad at it, too.
I think that's fantastic. I mean, just get Uber Eats. Come on.
Yeah. As far as the men went, an actor named Frederick Melligner was supposed to do all the yard work.
Oh, but when that's not happening. No.
Yeah, he just didn't do it. All the garden style.
And you know what they do? I'm acting like I'm doing it, but it's just, you're not doing it.
And they're just, he's just like miming a rake. Yeah. And then they go and they're like, why didn't you do the garden? Why aren't you doing all the leaves and stuff? And he's like, it's just not my true will to rake.
Actors.
And it's like, I just need you to just have the will to fucking, I'm going to kid you. I'm going to hit you.
The true skill that actors have is the ability to stay in the location for a long period of time. Like a one of these things they hang out in, the canisters of
an
shit.
An apartment?
No, when you're
a
on
trailer.
Set, a trailer. Yes, they can sit in those trailers for hours and hours and hours.
It's very important.
It's a skill.
And stay in the head mindset.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, method acting. Mm-hmm. That's good.
Well, there actually was one guy who tried using It's Not My True Will, that excuse to get out of work. Wilford Smith, the co-founder of the Agape Lodge.
He's in management.
He quit his day job. He was supposed to take care of the animals and the vegetables. But while I guess working at the fucking gas company, that's an acceptable position. Agriculture is apparently not a field fitting for a priest of the OTO.
It's not easy to do. Did he have any experimentation? Did he know how to grow a vegetable?
I do feel like there is something in manual labor that actually does help magically. I think that he was incorrect. It's because he was a fancy pants nerd.
When was the last time he did manual labor?
I'm in the house, I have to. Now, as soon as you have a house, you have to do a bunch of work, and it sucks.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah Northrup, meanwhile, didn't do shit except have sex with Jack and do her best to fuck up Jack's day when she felt Jack wasn't paying enough attention to her, which was always.
She was a spark plug.
That's good.
Bit of a smidge.
Oh.
Really, about the only one who did anything was Helen Parsons, who was still technically married to Jack. She was the treasurer, and she did a competent job. But the thing is that a lot of these people had kids, and they brought the kids to this mansion, and then they just kind of let them run wild.
It ain't for a family. You know what I mean? You're supposed to really be concentrating on the fucking, your onus and having sex under will and all that kind of shit. Not like, you got to go to kindergarten.
I would have gone with the no kid policy on that one. But if you are a kid running around the streets of Pasadena, and with fairly loose parenting, maybe it was kind of fun.
For some of them. These were like 3-year-olds.
That was probably miserable. They were just kind of confused and upset.
Yeah.
Well, as far as what Jack Parsons did, he had arguably the most important job. He paid for everything.
That is the most important job, and I need to talk to my fucking dogs about that.
Yeah.
Because Jerry and Puffin have been just, what do you do around here?
Yeah.
And it's like, you fucking, everything that you look at.
Wendy said something to me the other day. I was on the couch. She said, aren't you supposed to be on tour right now?
Shut the fuck up.
And I was like, let me just sit.
I know. It's unbelievable what they say with their eyes.
Mm-hmm. Well, he gave his entire paycheck to the Church of Thelema every month, save for $10 that he'd keep for himself. But for him, it was worth it. He provided the money, and the OTO provided him with a weird-ass family and a like-minded community.
Yeah, I really think, on his way, that's where, like, Jack Parsons is different than a lot of these other kind of remoras on society, as far as I'm concerned, where, like, he really was starting to find fellowship and loved it. He loved the actual practice and the study. And he was really getting into it. And he was just like, he did the thing where he looked around me like, how do I make this my life and not everything else?
That was the church I was forced to go to, Good News Fellowship Church. That's where they would marry a lesbian to a gay man because that's how that fixed that.
It did.
They did that.
Yeah, it's not good.
Yeah, this guy named Steve, he was real feminine and tiny. He married this huge chick who was a truck driver.
That's magic.
But I don't think it worked out. They probably were pretty sad.
Unless they started wailing on each other.
No,
like,
I don't.
Fucking like crazy.
I don't think so. It wasn't really like that.
I don't think it would happen.
It was a bad idea.
Well, Parsons also brought in more people on his level. He's kind of balancing out the dead weight of the drama teachers and the former silent film stars who hadn't worked since the talkies had arrived.
But they're setting up the atmosphere.
Yeah.
That is crazy. They must have, I feel like I pictured them in black and white.
It does. I don't know how to make them in color in my mind.
Yes.
Instead, Parsons brought in his old childhood friend and business partner, Ed Foreman. Also brought in Ed Foreman's wife.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
He also got a dude from the Hercules Powder Company and two math experts from Caltech. All these people were married, and they were all eager to learn about the sex magic secrets of the OTO. This is 1940. It's a weird time in America.
It's interesting because they really were, they understood the kind of like this thing of like, okay, if we're all doing magic, it's totally okay for all of us to come in and we'll all fuck all of our wives' hottest friends. And we'll all like hang out in a circle, or at least most willing. And then sometimes how willing you are, that shows how hot you are.
Okay.
What?
Yeah, I'm saying that like sometimes
well,
you're only as hot
for it.
Sometimes you know. You're only as hot as what you're willing to do.
That's horrible.
I'm just saying.
It makes sense. I mean,
sometimes you gotta find it. You like you are sitting in a hotel room and you're like, I need someone to fucking lick my asshole, and you're just gonna put that out in the universe, and you just gotta accept who shows up.
There you go.
All right. Well, since Parsons was attracting individuals that were in positions of real power and esteem, he also drew the attention of the FBI.
Yeah.
Oh.
The FBI would investigate Jack Parsons several times over the next 10 years, writing a file that would eventually stretch to 200 pages. However, the FBI never found anything illegal because Jack Parsons was only pretend evil, like most people in the OTO. But even though the FBI found nothing, neighborhood busybodies got in on the action, too.
Because this is what Anton LaVey will steal later on. But the concept of the satanic duality, that's what's fun, is that it creates a barrier to entry. You create this environment where it seems like super fucked up and super dark and mysterious. And that actually precludes a lot of people from involving themselves because they don't want to get involved in something that's super fucked up. But then when you arrive, you're like, oh, you're all kind of, it's kind of silly. It's kind of nerdy.
Boring.
But you say it's boring. I find it as an actor, it's fascinating. And the idea of like showing up in a costume and doing all of this shit is fucking rad. It's their version of LARPing. And they get to suck each other's dicks.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a neighbor calling himself, quote, a real soldier, sent a letter to Pasadena police tattling on Jack Parsons, writing that a black magic cult practicing Crowleyism and sexual perversion were flourishing at Orange Grove, and somebody better do something about it before it gets out of hand.
He's a real soldier. Go do it yourself.
He wasn't. He was a soldier of Pasadena's army of men that stare at your house.
Oh.
Now, as I said, nothing illegal was happening, but the Agape Lodge of the OTO was a dangerous organization to join emotionally if you weren't ready for it, because the OTO, it's kind of the swingers club of the magical world. Basically, it's threesome rules. If you have to be convinced to do it, you're not ready for it.
Nice.
In a prime example of feelings getting hurt, Jack Parsons brought in a guy named Grady McMurtry, who would eventually bring the OTO back from the brink of obscurity in 1971 with Helen Parsons.
Oh.
But back in 1941, when McMurtry first joined, he was dealing with the emotional consequences of sex magic after Parsons and Wilfred Smith spit roasted his wife, got her pregnant, and paid for an abortion without telling him.
Oh, interesting. Also, you continue to say spit roast. In America, it is called rotisserie. And we did learn this because when we did, were we in Amsterdam?
I forgot what it was.
We were in Manchester.
Yeah.
Because I mentioned rotisserie in one of our funny little bits. And then they were like, it's not rotisserie, it's spit roasting, which is so much more disgusting.
And that's what makes it more European.
Okay.
Yeah, and spit roasting. I brought that back from, that's one of the things I brought back from Manchester, as well as, a relapse of long COVID. So,
yeah,
hell yeah. Of course.
It's both. Fun. You got spit roasted by long COVID.
It has definitely been fucking both ends of your life.
Yeah.
Well, as a consequence, Grady McMurtry said that Parsons and his ilk were a bunch of empty-headed Athenians.
Oh, that's as much as he could say after they all had sex with his wife. He's like, you nerds.
Empty-headed Athenians.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and he also said that Parsons himself was, quote, as coked up as a snowbird.
Oh, that's funny.
He was correct in that last one.
Yeah,
that
very
one was,
much
he was absolutely correct.
Might be correct with the first one. We just don't know.
Well, in order to cope with all the new responsibilities facing Parsons in both the scientific and the magical world, Parsons started doing a lot of coke and a lot of speed. This was right around the time he co-founded his own company with the other Suicide Squad members and called it Aerojet.
Ooh, that's cool.
It is cool.
I like Aerojet.
Definitely a cocaine idea.
Oh, yeah.
In addition, Parsons was also making his own custom drugs using his vast knowledge of chemistry. And of course, this is encouraged by Aleister Crowley's teachings, because Crowley said that drugs can assist in magical ritual and astral travel.
Wait a second, like from the outside perspective, it's just a house that's now creating a bunch of drugs.
It's a meth lab, kind of. It's a bunch of questionable people in a very fancy neighborhood, like an elevated neighborhood, like the governor, like he had a house there and shit. And so that's what I love about this story is that they moved right into the heart of the burbs. Everybody was like, they created a community of naked artists. They were all like having sex with each other and doing all this shit, doing a bunch of drugs. And again, for the time period, it's super fucking awesome. For me, like this idea of like it's in the super kind of square like version of America where they're all fucking covered in cum.
I mean, you would go knock on the door right now at 9 p.m. and be like, can you keep it down, my dog?
Just turn it down to 9. Can we turn it down to 9?
Now, speaking of Crowley, while it was nice that Parsons was bankrolling the OTO chapter in California, Crowley also felt that some of that OTO money should be spread to Crowley himself.
Let's just think about this for a second. Let's just think about this, okay? Maybe I could get a little cut. Huh? Come on.
Yeah.
And not just for heroin.
Oh.
Not just.
Okay.
Yeah, for heroin.
He also needed it for his new magical project.
Wands. You think they grow on trees? Technically, yes, they do.
But it just seems like someone needs to get a job.
Aleister Crowley technically had a job, executive time. Yeah. He has to sit and think about all of the magic that he needs to do.
I got it.
Okay. He does have a job at this time. At this time, he's making rejuvenation potions from his own cum.
No, that's cum. That's easy? That's not a job.
You mean to tell me our fan of the show and friend, Tommy Pistol, that he doesn't have a job?
No,
he bangs
on camera, and he's got a huge ding-dong because technically he is kind of short, so I think the penis does look a little bit bigger. But anyway.
You're talking mess on a man who fucks for a living?
I'm not talking mess at all, but he doesn't sell rejuvenation potions from his cum. He puts his butthole on camera.
It's because he's leaving money on the table.
Does he sell dildos that are modeled after his own dick?
That's the 21st century version of that, I'd say. The fellas get to do, they don't make as much money as the gals there.
No.
Yeah. But they can sell their ding dongs. And gals sell a whole bunch of stuff.
Of course, yeah.
Well, at this point in history, Crowley was designing his tarot card deck.
Yeah, the Book of Toth deck, which is actually very powerful.
Oh, yeah, it's become fairly standard in the tarot community since Grady McMurtry and Helen Parsons pushed for its publication in the 70s. Now, Crowley considered these cards to be the most important thing he'd ever done. But Wilford Smith, who was still technically in charge of the Agape Lodge, he didn't agree.
Yeah.
What do you mean? So Aleister Crowley was just like, this is the most important thing I've ever done. And the other guy was like, no, it's not.
This is the thing about Thelema and magic is that it's all everybody's will. It's a bunch of upstarts. It's a bunch of people who got fucking mouthy mouths. But the problem is that Aleister Crowley didn't like that. He wanted a yes man. And when he presented this whole thing.
Well, yeah, because he said this is one of the most important things I've ever done. And then the person just said no.
It's their will.
It's just.
Well, Aleister Crowley was always looking for another Victor Neuberg.
Yeah.
Like he was, remember, he was the guy that he power-bottomed into insanity. Yeah. Like
he just could never get that guy back.
Neuberg.
He never could.
No.
When Smith didn't say yes to funding the tarot deck, he was ordered to step down. Now, the OTO was split between those who supported Smith and those who wanted the tarot deck. And Parsons sort of became the man in the middle, I think because he revered Crowley, but he was also friends with Wilfred.
Well, you need to get merch. I'm actually with Aleister Crowley on this one. People would buy those.
And they did.
And it really meant something later on after his fucking death, which is kind of sad. But Jack Parsons was regularly in communication with Aleister Crowley and he was trying to like say, hey, I'm super serious about this. Like, I want to be like, I want to be the center of this. It, not so much the leader, but like, we need, there's a vacuum of true leadership happening in Los Angeles and we need something. But at the same time, he liked Wilford Smith, even though Wilford Smith will later go on to bang his fucking ex-wife and make a child out of it. He had to deal with it, right?
Well, it was technically still his wife when he banged her and got her pregnant. But that was also all a part of the OTO. They were all cool with it. Well, in an attempt to sort of mend this rift, between Crowley and Smith, Parsons published a magazine called Oriflamme, which was filled with articles about magic that were written by Smith and Parsons.
And the Oriflamme was actually a republish of the original 1800s newsletter where the OTO was announced. But that's where the OTO, because back in the day, you'd have to you'd find out about the new esoteric group when it showed up in some kind of publication. And so that was where the OTO kind of introduced themselves in the 1890s, but they didn't become the OTO until 1915.
Yeah. Now today, Oriflamme is a Swedish makeup company. Mm-hmm. But back then, Parsons used the name to publish poetry that I actually like. Yeah. I actually like Jack Parsons' poetry. It's somewhere between Aleister Crowley and Hawkwind. It's like Iron Maiden lyrics, but psychedelic.
It's we hear some?
Yeah, Henry's going to read some. And I think you could take these lyrics and just do this on your own later on. You could sing some of these lines to the tune of the verse and Run to the Hills.
Yes.
It's got a very Maiden cadence to it.
Okay.
I hight Don Quixote. I'd live on peyote, marijuana, morphine, and cocaine. I never knew sadness, but only a madness that burns at the heart and the brain. I see charwoman ecstatic and human, angelic, demonic, divine. Each wagon a dragon, each beer mug a flagon that brims with ambrosial wine. The mountains are palaces, women are chalices meant to be supped and not sold. The desert a banquet hall set for a festival ripe for the free and the bold.
Oh.
You fucking, this is good.
The wind and the sky are ours, heaven and all its stars, waken and do what you will. Break with this demon spawned, hell inspired, nightmare bond, magic lies over the hill. They said I was crazy, ambiguous, lazy, disgusting, fantastic, obscene. So I hide from my sagebrush and cactus and corn mush to see if the air was still clean. Oh, I hide Don Quixote. I live in peyote, marijuana, morphine, and cocaine. And may I be twice damned for a bank clerk or storehand if I visit the city again.
Sounds like the Grinch.
It is. Who's getting his dick sucked?
Well, I think the Grinch did get his dick. Maybe that would have made him happier.
Oh, yeah, man. You put that in a fucking King Gizzard album, song. Yeah, yeah, man. Those lyrics.
Dr. Seuss-y with
pretty good
it,
psychedelic
sure.
lyrics, man.
No, yeah, man. That's medieval rap.
That's yeah, it was. I mean, honestly, it's better than anything in Hamilton.
I'll agree.
Oh, I don't know what happened with that.
I don't know either. Now, Parsons was pleased as punch at this poem and in everything he did for Oriflamme. But when he sent a copy to his mentor, Crowley hated it just like he hated everything that he himself did not write.
He was just on heroin.
Well, this is the thing.
Just angry and sick. And I guarantee you, if you met him when he was super high, he probably would have loved it.
I believe that he was, in a word, jealous. I think that he missed his youthful energy and he wanted to yuck his yum as much as possible because no one should feel the freedom that Aleister Crowley felt. He called him he said the whole problem with him is that he was too poetic.
Yeah.
Too poetic. Okay.
In fact, Crowley was particularly enraged at the poem.
Which is funny. He wrote poetry. Aleister Crowley started writing poetry.
Well, it wasn't the poem that he was. It wasn't poetry itself that Crowley was upset about. He was upset over the subject matter because he wrote to Jane Wolfe that all the poem was going to do was revive the ancient stories about Crowley concerning drug trafficking and so on.
Crowley was really mad towards the end of his life that all anybody will ever talk about is how I'm addicted to heroin and I ate shit that one time. He was so butthurt at the end, which is so funny because you're you're the most evil man in the world. That was your whole gig, dude. And now you're mad that they're calling you that. You set it up because it's just once you're labeled a genius one time, you think you're a genius in every aspect. You start to think no, now they need to understand me on my terms. Or we're no, bro, you sold yourself as the great devil. And now they bought it. So you live with it.
Yeah, at this point in history, the last time that Aleister Crowley had been in the news was him actually trying to say that he wasn't evil.
Yes.
That he had gone, because he tried to win a defamation suit.
Yes. And he's it was a character. He did the Alex Jones.
Yeah.
He broke character in court.
Yeah, he said that actually his name means little sunshine, and trying to get some money.
Yeah.
Okay.
Live from your grave.
Hey there, podcast listener. Have you ever been listening to Wizard and the Bruiser and thought to yourself, I wish I could see just how fat Jake and Holden are in real life.
Don't lie, we know all about your weird inside thoughts, listeners.
Well, now you can make that dream a reality, because Whizbrew and Page 7 are going on tour.
Austin, Dallas, Milwaukee, Chicago, Minneapolis,
DC, Philly, Brooklyn, San Francisco, LA.
Nowhere is safe from an all-new show we're calling Release the Butthole Cut.
Ew. Come join your fellow LPN fans for a night of pop culture chaos that's fun for the whole family, assuming your family consists of equally broken weirdos in their 30s.
It's going to be a blast. Tickets are on sale right now at lastpodcastnetwork.com. Go, go now!
There's VIP meet and greet passes available as well, in case you want to get, you know, a little extra close, especially personal.
I legally have to clarify that there is no sexual element involved.
I mean, unless, you know.
Okay, geez, Jake. All right, stop winking, all right, buddy?
It's Page 7 and Wizard and the Bruiser live. Go to lastpodcastnetwork.com for dates and tickets.
Now, Jack Parsons was embarrassed that Crowley wasn't picking up what he was putting down. But Carl Germer, Crowley's second in command, still had great respect for what Jack was doing. Germer also noticed that Parsons was the only one with any money because his company, Aerojet, was getting more and more profitable off government contracts. Lest you forget that World War II was still going on.
Well, that was going to be one of my questions. Any concern about that?
What?
It doesn't seem like they're really talking about the big war.
No, no, they're doing magic. And then the rest of their life is spent building weapons for the war. So they spend their whole days doing the war, and then at nighttime, they're getting their dicks up.
Oh, I see. But, so they are focused on the war. They know the war's happening.
But no, they're all in the arms industry. Yeah, very much.
Again, war profiteers.
Well, they got their, they didn't have to be drafted because they were considered essential for the war effort working on the weapons program.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So, since Parsons had the brains and the bankroll, he was put forth as the only alternative from Wilford Smith for leadership in the Agape Lodge.
Meanwhile, he wasn't super pleased.
No.
He didn't really want to be in charge. Again, he was like, that's not what I'm saying. He's like, I like to, executive producer is a really good place to be where you show up and you don't have to come up with every single thing. You're like the fourth executive producer. You pay for stuff and then you go like, that curtain should be brown. And then you sit the rest of the time in Video Village with the things. And then you get, and then you just get to do your sex magic.
So it sounds like he was more of the inventor and not like it's not a company. He wants to invent.
Yeah,
he doesn't want to run a company.
He wanted the life of the mind.
Yeah. And since Crowley was further put off by Wilford Smith, because Crowley thought Smith was turning the OTO into a boring love cult.
Whatever.
Jack's ascendance as head of the Agape Lodge was arranged. In return, Parsons gave Crowley $300 for the tarot deck, perhaps revealing the more practical impetus behind Jack's new leadership role.
Thank you, Jack.
Yeah, that's nice. That's a lot of money.
Now, this was 1943, and all this infighting had led to a significant exodus of the Orange Grove Mansion residents, who were actually probably more interested in Wilford Smith's love cult angle than they were in living by the Thelemic principles.
I mean, it just depends. That's what's nice about these lodges, right? Because if you're in there for the ritual magic, you got you covered. But if you're in there to just do group fucky-sucky, all you got to do is put on the costumes and go like, yep, I'm Saladin, blah, 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 and then you do it.
But if you don't like it, you can only do it for so long.
Yes, eventually it does become annoying, I can imagine.
See, while Parsons definitely kept the sex parties, he had refocused the lodge to make magical attainment the highest priority, and he began teaching classes on the tarot and Crowleyan studies. Now, once Wilford Smith was out as the head of the OTO, Crowley naturally wanted to get rid of him altogether. But Wilford Smith and Helen Parsons had begun an affair of their own, and Helen was pregnant.
Yeah.
And since Parsons actually did walk the walk when it came to the no jealousy rule, he asked Crowley to not take any further action against Wilford Smith until after the child was born, because he still loved his wife. They're all in it together, you know?
Oh, yeah. He's trying to make it work.
Yeah. But as soon as the child known as Quinn Lanval Parsons was born,
it's going to be fun.
Crowley set a complicated and humiliating plan in motion that was somewhat of a mix between a test of faith and a highly elaborate practical joke.
Which is Crowley at his very core. Yes. At his very core, like I've been reading Moonchild too, and I forget how funny Moonchild is. Mm-hmm. Like Moonchild also has a lot of like parody of other magicians. Like he makes fun of fucking the Golden Dawn. He makes fun of these people. Like there's like funny shit in it. But yeah, he definitely, because you can't just kick him out.
Yeah.
You can't just say, like, get out of here. He has to come up with, like, this kind of, you know, put him through it. He's got to put him through a bunch of labors.
I mean, you could just say get out of here, but.
But if you do that, then you lose. If you say just get out of here, you lose credibility. You lose leadership. You have to make them leave, because that's the thing. And it strengthens you if they leave, especially after you give them a bunch of goofy bullshit to do. You can say they were not strong enough. Because check it out. Listen to what Crowley had him do.
Okay.
Crowley sent Wilford Smith a 12-page letter that presented a mixture of Kabbalistic calculation, omen-telling, and oracle reading. It included Smith's horoscope drawn up and cross-referenced with broad readings from Crowley's masterwork, The Book of the Law.
Yeah, and he's just looking at this like, it's homework, right? Which is all of Crowley, right? It's a lot of work. You look at it, you're like, okay, how do I, all right, I'm parsing through this.
And once Crowley established the appropriate amount of magical bullshit in the letter to the point where Smith couldn't argue with it, Crowley concluded by declaring that Wilford T. Smith was not a man at all, but was in fact the incarnation of a god, although Crowley did not know which god he was.
So Crowley posits, like, listen, so the best part is, you're no longer needed as the leader of the California edition of the OTO. I get it, right? You do, I mean, that's a bummer. But it's a promotion in a way. Where you are now, though, but you're a god.
I'm a god.
You're
now.
A god. I don't know which
what
one.
What superpowers do I have?
Oh, one of those superpowers is definitely not being in charge of the OTO anymore.
Whoa, that's cool.
But because that's beneath you.
I'm a god.
You're too good for it.
I believe it. I'm a god now.
Well, Smith's mission, Crowley wrote, was to find out which god he was.
That's a lot.
And in order to do this, he gave him a plan, though. He said, you got to leave the Orange Grove Mansion.
You're going to need to leave town. You're going to need to get the fuck out of it. Okay?
You're going to have to cut off all contact with the Agape Lodge.
Yep. Uh-huh.
You're going to have to tattoo the number 666 on your forehead.
This is the only way. I've done the reading. I've done the math.
Uh-huh.
And you got to move to the desert.
Well,
and then, after you go out, do all that, only then will you be set upon the path to discovering which god you are. That's the prep work.
Yeah.
I wish I had this logic when I was a bouncer to get drunkards out of the bar.
Yeah, be like, listen, you're not drunk enough that we, to be honestly, dude.
Come back when you're drunker.
You should come back when you're drunker.
Yeah.
Smith, of course, resigned from his position rather than go through this humiliating ordeal that was obviously just meant to humiliate him.
Yeah.
Oh, he didn't get the 666 tattoo on his face?
No, the guy who got the Rob R
on his face?
The vibe seems to be he was excited up top, and then as he was going through the documentation, he's like, I'm being roasted.
So he did notice.
Yes.
Okay. Well, the thing is, though, Parsons soon resigned as well. The infighting and the pressure from his job was starting to get to him, and the weak attempt to manipulate Wilford Smith into doing something so stupid kind of soured Jack Parsons on Aleister Crowley for just a little bit. But if you'll remember, Jack Parsons had grown up without a father, so Crowley jumped on that need for a father figure by writing a paternal, if bullying, letter refusing to accept the resignation. Crowley also, of course, left out the part saying that he really needed Parsons to stay because he was the only one around making any real money.
Yes.
Right.
He was definitely the angel donator.
Yeah. Yes.
Now, Parsons knew that he was being manipulated, but he still had a thirst for knowledge, and he still believed in the OTO, and he believed in Crowley's work, even if he didn't always believe in Crowley himself.
Oh, yeah.
So Parsons decided to adopt Crowley as a father figure, and he continued his work for the OTO.
I mean, most of our dads haven't eaten human shit.
I mean, I don't know what my father did in Vietnam.
That's true.
Your dad fucked around in a submarine in the Gulf of Mexico in Vietnam.
Well, actually, we don't know, he didn't eat human shit.
To be honest, I feel like that actually shows that it was more likely to eat a lump of human shit because all these Navy men are all fucking pranking each other and shit.
Yeah.
They used to take out the torpedo tubes and he'd crawl inside the torpedo tubes and they roll them up and down the submarine. They had a great time in Vietnam.
I can't believe we didn't win that war.
I don't know what happened.
Now, concerning Jack Parsons' place in the scientific world, he was very much developing machines of war. He was building guided missiles that could fly 150 miles to deliver 1,000-pound payloads, capable of killing hundreds, if not thousands, in a single shot. But what's crazy is that while he was developing these weapons of medium destruction, he was also playing dangerous pranks on his employees. He was like setting off smoke bombs during lunch.
He's a fun guy. He's out of pocket, man.
I would really like to be the employee, but it sounds like he had fun.
Great fun. No, he would take firecrackers and walk up to areas where they were working on volatile chemicals, and he put the firecracker into a tin can to make it louder, and then he'd light it.
That's funny.
And then everyone would freak out because they thought they were about to die, but he's laughing and laughing.
My thing is, man, honestly, your job is you're making these bombs, right? Stop being so scared all the time.
Well, it's a scary process.
Stop flinching. Jack Parsons was steely-eyed.
Mm-hmm.
I guess so.
But since Parsons was of the opinion that no object is neither good nor evil, even if it is a ballistic missile.
How do I make this neutral? if it's just in your house, it's a table.
That could be a table. It could be a lamp. It could really be anything. Maybe you could use it to make holes if you wanted a little lake.
I definitely helped me fucking, you could take over that HOA with one.
Oh, sure. Oh, my goodness.
Well, Jack's company pushed forward, and they were given $3 million to further develop missile and jet technology. This shit's getting bigger and bigger. By that time, Aerojet had changed its name to the Jet Propulsion Research Project, or JPL.
Jack Parson lives! That's what they call it. That's what they call it nowadays.
And the group dynamic had changed as well. It was far more corporate, and eventual trips to the moon had taken a backseat to the possible destruction of everything on the ground. Damn. It's not a bunch of buddies blowing shit up anymore.
No. It's getting out of the job.
They're dealing with some pretty important stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe you want a little structure.
But Parsons continued to use JPL as his private experimental lab, continuing on with the same self-educated DIY attitude that had gotten him there in the first place. This, of course, caused tensions with the more hoity-toity employees at JPL, like an astrophysics professor named Frank Zwicky.
Whatever, nerd. You're not fucking having herb sex.
But now, can we just say maybe they're right? Because it seems like he's doing a lot of experimental stuff with very dangerous chemicals.
And he needs to think of ideas and he needs to do things as it is his will.
Yeah.
Doesn't have a degree.
Well, that's the thing. Zwicky said. He said that Parsons was dangerous and untrained, which, you know, he was. Both of those things were very true, but he got results.
Bro, who needs that fucking degree, bro? Does LeBron need a degree in jumping in a basketball game?
No, it's different. It's different.
If anyone on this show, Ben, that I would imagine would be
this
fucking
man.
Absolutely for Jack
I'm
Parsons.
Fine.
This man.
No,
it's just logic.
I am fine with the man who pulled himself up by his weird suspenders, and he made himself a physicist without a degree. But I'm just saying, at some point, maybe he could have gone to a class. Maybe there's just a safety class.
He was the class, bro.
Well, that might be the problem.
Well, Zwicky had no respect for Parsons, and Zwicky would order chemicals for experiments that Parsons told him wouldn't work for rockets. Parsons
fucking
was like, why
wrong,
are you doing that?
Zwicky. Fuck you, Zwicky.
Yeah, but Zwicky's saying, I've got the fucking, I'm a professor. I've got the knowledge. I'll order them.
Mr. Teacher, I'll do whatever you want, Mr. Teacher.
I like the doers more than the teachers.
He's on the teacher's side. What has happened?
I am pro-teacher in many ways. I mean, just think he could have been taught how to be safer.
That's so weird.
All right, that's so weird. I want to see how you respond to this, Ben.
All right.
When the chemicals arrived, the Zwicky ordered, the Parsons said, no, we don't need those. Why are you ordering those? When they arrived, Parsons snuck out to the building where the chemicals were being held, and he blew up the building.
That's what I'm fucking talking about, dude.
I mean,
the master. Oh, Mr. Teacher, Teacher?
What is he fucking, is he Tiger King trying to kill his alligators?
He's in charge of himself, bro.
Yeah, man,
we're about to go to war.
We're in war.
We're in war.
Yeah, man, all's fair in war.
This is with us. He's at war. Technically, it's an act of domestic terrorism.
Look at you. We got him in the hypocrite trap.
No, this is not a hypocrite
trap. We got him right in there. We got him.
He blew up a government building because he was pissed at a professor.
We got him against the wall. Hear him scrambling.
It's not a government building. This is a private building, bro. This is a company that he owns with a bunch of
private
dudes.
Private enterprise, bro. Freedom is a two-edged sword.
He just sounds like he would buy Twitter for $44 billion.
Yeah, that's his. That is his fucking ability.
Okay.
No, man. This is a company that is owned and founded by a bunch of dudes called the Suicide Squad.
Yeah, bro. Get with it.
All right. I'm fine with it.
Just all right. Saying. All right.
Eventually, though, the demands the military put on Parsons got to be too much. They demanded 20,000 JADO mechanisms a month when Parsons had barely managed to build 2,000 in the entire previous year.
Hmm.
And so when a company called General Tire bought 51% of the company Parsons had started with the Suicide Squad, Jack Parsons and Edward Foreman sold their shares to Frank Molina for $11,000. No small sum in 1943.
Absolutely okay. Not. And there was a little bit of conjecture about whether or not they were forced out or not, or asked to leave. And they, because, again, they were, the suits took over.
Sure.
So once the suits came in and took, they bought it out and stuff, and they look at Jack Parsons, and they were like, well, you're too much of a renegade.
Well, because he blew up that entire building.
Taught that teacher a lesson he should have known himself.
Huh. Ever since, that company has been involved in every manned space vehicle that the United States has ever launched. And the shares Foreman and Parsons sold were worth $12 million just by the 1960s. Never mind present day.
That was maybe a mistake. Maybe they should have kept those.
They might have just fired them.
Put them in your back pocket.
Yeah.
But money was not what Jack Parsons was after.
Freedom!
But money, oftentimes, it has been scientifically proven now that it does make you happier.
He already was, it's different. he's trying to get in the magic biz.
Okay.
While he still briefly worked as a consultant for JPL after the sale, he left the rocketry world completely at the age of 30 to completely focus on magic for the rest of his short life.
Age 3, the man ascends.
Ooh.
Now, in modern value, Jack Parsons' $11,000 was worth $200,000, a fair sum.
Yeah.
So using these proceeds, he bought out the mansion lease at 1003 Orange Grove Avenue and spent almost all of his time at the lodge as a man of magic and leisure.
That's all I want. One day, if you could listen to this jazz fusion shit, dude. If you got
I can't wait to hear
week,
it. Man, I like, can't wait.
All day long. That's all you listen to. Like, yeah.
Just like, nice.
Fucking and drinking espressos.
Sounds exciting. So he was alone now, or he still had a whole crew?
He's got the whole, dude, he's got the crew. He's living with the crew. Okay. He's there 24 hours a day. Jack don't got to fucking wake up at 7 a.m. to go in and build rockets no more. Jack's there all fucking day long, bro.
Yeah, dude.
He's there playing with toy boats in his bathtub.
Yeah,
he's
bro.
There hanging out with Sarah.
That's my boy.
All right.
He's there fucking playing drinking games with Grady McMurtry, who had since forgiven him for impregnating his wife and paying for an abortion behind his back. They're playing drinking games, man.
That's fun.
They had this one drinking game where they would chug aperitifs, and then they would recite esoteric texts to see who could articulate their recitations the longest.
Because that's important, because you're supposed to hold your attention. A lot of the fucking ritual shit's all memorization.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But while Parsons was out of the rocket game, he wasn't yet done with explosions. He and Ed Foreman founded the Ad Astra Engineering Company, named after one of Aleister Crowley's magical organizations, and they continued to experiment with combustibles. At the same time, though, Parsons was alienating some of the older members of the OTO with his complete control over the mansion on Orange Grove.
Hmm.
To make ends meet, because he's not getting that Aerojet money anymore,
no.
Parsons was renting out every available room to people outside of the OTO, although he still wanted to make sure he had the right vibe from all the new residents. This is what he wrote in a newspaper ad calling for boarders.
And remember, I think this was 1947.
Okay.
No, is it that
45?
It's like 44, 45, somewhere around there.
Only bohemians, artists, musicians, atheists, anarchists, and other exotic types need apply for rooms. Any mundane soul would be ceremoniously ejected.
The thing about a mundane soul is they pay rent.
Well, you're looking for a non-mundane soul that has disposable income.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Sounds like what they're... It's the same thing that they're doing in Williamsburg, Brooklyn right now.
Very much so.
Yeah.
What do you mean? Williamsburg, Brooklyn?
Yeah, it's a bunch of trust fund kids.
It's a bunch of kids that you somehow have $5,000 a month for rent and they don't work.
The real artists are out in Bushwick now.
Yeah, sucking dick by the bridge.
They're even further out than that now, man. They're in Ridgewood. And even then...
Oh, is it made it all the way to Queens?
I'm salty. I'm salty
about
that.
You guys don't know this? Oh, no, dude. Ridgewood is like supposedly like one of the coolest neighborhoods on earth now. They're lying. They're absolutely lying.
Okay, no. I mean, it's the people that make it cool. Sure.
I guess so. If they only knew Catalpa. But even though the OTO members weren't super jazzed about non-members coming in, Jack's ads did create a groovy atmosphere.
Right. So music, it sounds like that. Like,
As author George Pendle put it, nuclear scientists and rocket scientists lived alongside occultists and sci-fi nerds.
Cool.
While Parsons and Sarah Northrup led Gnostic masses for the OTO members upstairs as high priest and high priestess.
Ooh, I can feel the groove.
Oh,
man.
Sure.
Now, concerning those sci-fi nerds, Parsons was still a massive science fiction fan after all those years. Oh, yeah. And he'd been hanging out with some of the most famous sci-fi writers of the century. He was hanging out with Robert Heinlein.
Heinlein actually tried to say he had nothing to do with Jack Parsons, but they know for a fact that they were really close friends. Heinlein's a weird guy.
Huh. Yeah, he's a weird guy, yeah. But he was hanging out with Ray Bradbury as well.
Oh.
Yeah. And they were both fascinated by the way Parsons could bring science fiction into reality.
You hear that? Science fiction into reality. Guess who's coming into the scene soon? My boy's coming around.
All right.
Now, as far as how Parsons met those guys, the Los Angeles sci-fi writers like Heinlein, Bradbury, and Isaac Asimov, as well as special effects nerds like Ray Harryhausen, you know, who did the fucking The Skeletons and Clash of the Titans, publishers like Forrest Ackerman.
Who is one of the most important collectors of all time. He had, he collected esoteric things and pop culture
things. I've heard that name a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they'd all hang out together in a downtown Los Angeles cafeteria called Clifton's.
Which is where Jackie had her bachelorette party.
Oh, is it still existing?
Yeah, it's still there.
It still exists.
Yeah. Jeez.
Well, that's interesting.
Well, Clifton's was run by Clifford Clinton, who'd been the anti-corruption activist whose investigations into Mayor Frank Shaw had led to the car bombing we talked about last week.
It's all coming together.
See, from what I can tell, and I might be wrong on this, Clifford Clinton was probably the one who thought to ask for star witnesses in the car bombing trial from Caltech, because Clifford had underwritten projects at Caltech concerning the development of nutritional foodstuffs to combat mass starvation.
Cool, like bugs.
Yeah.
Oh, not bugs. Cornflakes.
Pink slop.
Mm. Yeah, it's bugs. It's going to be bugs. Yeah. We're all going to be eating bugs.
We're not all going to be eating bugs.
We won't know it, though.
We are going to know it.
We're going to be eating bugs.
No one's eating bugs.
You're going to be eating... Well, you're not going to live long enough to eat bugs.
Yeah, he's not going
to
even know.
You're not going to live long enough to eat bugs. I'm the healthiest one here.
You're right. I forgot. You're right.
Technically, I am.
What?
Medically.
What?
What?
You haven't seen a doctor in 20 years.
Exactly.
Well, it's at Caltech that Clinton was put on to Jack Parsons. Mm. And after Parsons became the star witness to put the car bomber behind bars, he dropped by Clifford Clinton's cafeteria, where he found the greatest sci-fi minds of their generation just hanging out.
Yeah,
all
man.
Right. Everyone's at Clifton's.
Eating soup.
I love it.
Oh, yeah, man. Split pea Wednesdays. Now, these meetings were certainly impressive, just for the amount of brain power in the room. It's sort of like that crew of directors who all hung out in the 70s, like, you know, Spielberg and Lucas and Scorsese and Coppola all fucking hanging out.
Yeah, it's like when everyone, it was like when Bill Gates and Clinton used to hang out with Epstein.
Great minds.
But in last podcast land, these sci-fi meetings at Clifton's cafeteria are more known for being the place where a certain sci-fi writer supposedly made a bet with Robert Heinlein that he could make a religion out of science.
All we do is replace gods with beakers.
Yeah, all of this is being done around soup.
And it's a soup-based life.
It is a soup-based life, isn't it?
Now, that story isn't true, but there's no doubt that had it not been for those meetings at Clifton's cafeteria, Jack Parsons would have never met L. Ron Hubbard.
The ginger lover extraordinaire.
Yeah.
The smartest man with the best body who's ever lived in the 20th century.
There you go.
And L. Ron Hubbard may have never learned what he needed to learn in order to eventually create Scientology.
Mm.
Yes. And it's with the entrance of L. Ron Hubbard and the eventual destruction of Jack Parsons that we'll conclude our series in 2 weeks after the Thanksgiving holiday.
You must be careful who you pretend to be, because we are who we pretend to be. Indeed. And Jack Parsons, he will be emoliated like so much rocket fuel on his way to magical purity. And the problem is with every genius is that they're absolved into the Godhead. While the artist who must a lot of times decipher a genius works, they live on and on and on to smoke parliaments in space.
Oh.
Thinking about how they used to be a clam.
You sound like someone trying to explain that really shitty movie where everyone walks backwards.
What?
In the movie where everyone...
Tenet. Yeah. Tenet. He's mixing it up with Inception.
No, I'm talking Tenet.
Tenet is the...
They all walk backwards.
It's hard for the people to see. You go, Tenet. Like, you do the hand signal.
It's the dumbest thing I've ever seen, but everyone's like, I think I get it. It's like, no, it was just poorly written.
It's just sparingly written.
All right, everyone. Well, thank you so much for listening.
I can't believe he's pro-teacher today.
You're pro-teacher, pro-gatekeeping.
I just said he shouldn't blow up the goddamn building.
I thought that you were the lamplight of libertarian freedom, and all you are is talking about all of these structures.
Exists in any
sense. You're so happy to have all this infrastructure. What's happened to him? I thought it was always be cozy.
You guys have been trying to speak for me for a long time.
Yeah? All you do is talk.
Thank God. Okay, everyone. Well, thank you for listening.
Unbelievable.
We will see everybody in Indianapolis and Grand Rapids this weekend. Marcus, he's not going to be there, but we're going to have Jackie Zabrowski and Holden McNeely.
Yes.
So they'll fulfill half of what Marcus can bring. So there you go.
I would say we need two others to completely fulfill you, but Eddie is busy.
Thank you, Larson is on his honeymoon right now, enjoying his life and swimming in a lot of water.
Yeah. And thanks to everyone who is being very understanding about me taking these shows off. I'm still good enough to record, still good enough to, you know, live a life, but just not good enough to travel to two different cities and perform for 6 hours over the course of 2 days. So thank you very much for for understanding.
Yeah, I like about our fans is that they are fairly chill.
They're cool, fairly chill.
They're cool.
Well, thank you.
They're cool.
Sometimes they get riled up, but so do I.
All right, everyone. Well, thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting all the shows here on the network. And what we're doing on Sirius has been so fun. And you guys are just being wonderful. So hail yourselves.
Hail Satan.
Ogeen.
Congratulations, everybody.
And find your path yourself. It's important.
It is important.
You go out there every day, right? You fucking find your locus. And sometimes it takes some reading. Oh. Sometimes it takes getting your butthole licked in a mansion somewhere.
Yeah, all of that is fine, but then he blew up a building. That's all I'm saying.
I can't believe that he is
Don't commit acts of domestic terrorism.
He said he wanted to become a police officer before our last episode.
No, I didn't say that. I said I was 9 years old and my mom told me not to.
He's changed everything. He's changed.
Oh my God. All right.
This show is made possible by listeners like you. Thanks to our ad sponsors, you can support our shows by supporting them. For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to lastpodcastnetwork.com.